Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network, and this is going to be a good one because I've got the good coffee. They've brought the good coffee in. We've got five live games on Sky Sports this weekend, this week coming up. We've got the Eagles and the Cowboys, the 49ers and the Seahawks. We've got the Patriots and the Packers, some banner showdown games coming up. And my regular partner, Jeff Rimbold, is heading to the championship game of the CFL, the Grey Cup. Jeff, congratulations.
I appreciate it very much, Neil. It's been a crazy, crazy ride from 1-6 to, you know, winning 9 of the last 12 and big win Sunday over in Montreal to get us in the championship game. So if you're a Washington Redskins fan and you know the name Brandon Banks, who we picked up from the Redskins, he had an unbelievable game, set an all-time CFL record, 226 yards of punt return yards, that really two unbelievable returns won the game for us.
Yeah, great stuff for you guys, Jeff, heading to the championship game. We're going to look today at what happened in week 12 in the NFL. Look ahead to week 13, of course, a big weekend with Thanksgiving Day coming up on Thursday. We're going to hear from Hall of Fame defensive tackle Curly Culp, and we're going to take some of your questions in the mailbag. Jeff, I want to start with the New England Patriots. A big win, 34-9 over the Detroit Lions. But I want to talk about two things with Bill Belichick, and it's great to have you look at this from a coaching aspect. First of all, let's talk about Jonas Gray, because when we saw the headlines, I'm sure you thought the same thing I did on Friday. When you saw the headlines that Jonas Gray overslept and missed practice, you knew that the 200-yard rusher from last week who scored four touchdowns, who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, probably wasn't getting anywhere near that football field on Sunday. And that was how it turned out. This is classic Bill Belichick.
Well, you know what? They go out and they pick up LeGarrette Blount, who's been in there before, so it's easier for him to make the transition back, understands the terminology, knows the plays. But they just have that unbelievable ability to just plug guys in, and it seems like everybody they plug in that system, Blount comes in right off the street after being cut, and, you know, 78 yards and two touchdowns later, you know, they score 34 points on a good Lions run defense. So it's amazing. They are an absolute amazing study in continuity, in doing things the Patriot way, as they say, and just finding guys to make plays for them.
I know there's never any doubt that Bill Belichick is the boss in New England, but do you think he used Jonas Gray to send a message, and he was able to do that because he did have LeGarrette Blount there, who they'd signed away from the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, I think it's really important that people understand that one of the reasons he's able to do these kinds of things, where he can discipline a player like this, who, young kid that makes a mistake and, you know, thinks one game in the NFL makes a career, so he oversleeps and misses meetings, and, you know, it's easy to be have discipline and you know, set a guy down if you got another guy who's waiting in the wings to step up and play. But, you know, the bottom line, the NFL is winning, so you got to have your best players on the field. And but, you know, in the Patriot organization, in the Patriot culture, you know, there's always a guy that's going to take your job. I think they make that very clear to their players that everybody's here on basically a work visa, a temporary work visa. And, you know, if you're going to do it our way, you get to stay a little bit longer. But if you're not going to do it our way, they're going to find another guy to do it.
The New England Patriots have knocked off three division leaders, Jeff, in their last three games: Denver, Indianapolis, and Detroit. And we talk all the time about teams with offensive identities or defensive identities. So maybe you can tell us how hard this is to do, because the game against Denver, they called 54 passing plays. Tom Brady has 300 yards and four touchdowns. They ran the football 25 times. Against Indianapolis, I think they saw they could be physical with them. They threw the football 30 times. They had 44 runs. This past week against the number one rushing defense in the NFL, Brady throws it 53 times. They run it 20 times. Tell us about the week-to-week game planning. I know you've just alluded to it a little bit with what Belichick does and how he gets his team ready, but those numbers are easy to read, but they're not easy to produce like that each week.
Well, it is very difficult, and obviously it starts at quarterback. You've got to have a guy who can make plays and make throws for you if you have to throw it 53 times. Because in the NFL, you're going to run into defensive lines like Detroit has and teams that stack the box and make it tough on you to run. And you have to have the ability to throw it. But, again, I just think that – I think the thing that our listeners have to understand about the Patriots is just how flexible they are. There is nothing – that they can't do if they need to. If they need to run it, they can run it. If they need to throw it, they can throw it. And again, you look at the parts, it's one of those deals where the sum far exceeds the parts, because do they have great players? Yes. Gronkowski's a great player. You know, Tom Brady's a great player. But you look at guys like Brandon LaFell, who has 9 catches for 98 yards, and Edelman has 11 catches. Those aren't guys that come to your name. I mean, come to your mind. Is when you say talk about NFL wide receivers, but they function extremely well inside the system because they understand their role. They are willing to sublimate their ego to the good of the team. And that's why, again, they're able to do those kinds of things. That offensive line, and that's the area where they don't, where you don't talk about them very much, but quietly that offensive line has improved from a really bad opening week to now settled. Being functioning extremely well as a unit.
Yeah, settled on 5 guys, I think, which is important because they switch around. I want to ask you about offensive lines in a little while, Jeff, because we see offensive lines around the league struggling. And so you can tell us about why they struggle, when injuries come about, do they make a difference, the communication. So we'll talk all about that in a few minutes. But you're not a million miles away from Buffalo. I know that. And the Buffalo area. Oh, my goodness. What was it, about 7 foot of snow this past week? The Bills end up going and playing in Detroit last night. They hammer the Jets 38-3. Tell us about the job that, well, first of all, tell us what it was like there this week in that area. And tell us the job that Doug Marrone did to keep this team focused.
Well, it's amazing how they were able to do this. Now, you got to understand, we're 45 minutes from Buffalo. But we're on the other side of the lake, and what Buffalo gets is what's called lake effect snow. So the storms come in off of the lake, and that morning that storm hit, you're listening to WGR, which is the sports talk show out of Buffalo. The guys were talking about how it looked like a wall of white descending on the city, and they got 90 inches of snow in 12 hours, and you couldn't even begin. People couldn't, they opened the doors of their homes and had to dig themselves out from indoors. And so the Bills obviously couldn't practice. They were concerned, frankly, about the safety of their players. As a matter of fact, when they got on the plane, they eventually, 2 days later, were able to dig out enough the airport that they could get planes in and out. But they had to go out and gather their players, some of them by snowmobile, because the roads were just still impassable. Wow. Matter of fact, Steve Tasker, who was a great player for the Bills, and
some plays for you guys,
does,
right?
Yeah, broadcasting. His son Luke plays for us, and I asked Luke, I said, "Luke, is your family okay?" Because they live in Orchard Park, right by the stadium. And he said his dad had flown in Sunday night from the game that he did, got in, tried to get home, and couldn't get home, had to sleep in a hotel at the airport and then leave the next day. His dad still hasn't been home. So that's, if you can imagine that, how unbelievable. They said that the snow that was inside Ralph Wilson Stadium, that they had moved enough out of the parking lot that they could, if they took all the snow they'd moved out of the parking lots, they could fill the inside of the stadium. That's how much snow they had. Wow. So tremendous. Coach Marrone and his staff got on the computers and did as much. It's lucky we're in this technology age, because they were able to get video clips, game plans, all of those things. They could communicate with the players, but they just couldn't see them, couldn't physically practice with them. So they never even practiced until they got over to Detroit. And, you know, I think they played 2 days later. So to go in there and last night and play as well as they played, you know, 38-3 was a huge, huge thing for Coach Marrone and his staff, and you know, breathe a little bit of life back into that Buffalo season.
Jeff, tell us from a coaching point of view, if the worst had happened and the Buffalo Bills hadn't stepped on the practice field all week, I know the NFL probably wouldn't have allowed that for them to then go and play, but tell us the importance of practice. I mean, could a team, would they still have had a shot at winning that game, or is it literally there's no way? I mean, tell us what would have happened had they not been able to practice.
Yeah, you would have a shot. And I think that really, you know, practices in the NFL now are so, and in our league too, we've got one padded practice a week. So you're not getting the hardest thing to work on is the timing in the run game, because the players don't have the pads on. And but if you have a veteran team that's been around for a while and played together for a while, it's much easier. When you're in the situation that both of these teams are, that you're, you know, making personnel changes, you've got new guys coming and going, it's practice for the timing and the rhythm of, you know, what you do offensively, particularly. It's usually offense that struggles the most with the timing. You really do need the practice. But again, you look at the Bills last night, and you know, they have the ability to run the ball, and that always helps you. And you know, to play that well with all of the adversity that they faced on the road, you know, in front of, you know, kind of a mixed crowd, I guess, is what you would describe it. There certainly was no home field advantage for them last night. So, you know, I really give Coach Marone and his staff full marks for doing a phenomenal job in the face of, you know, the easiest thing would have been to, you know, look for all the excuses to not play well. And they didn't do that because the Jets had a full week of practice plus.
Yeah, absolutely. No, quite a week for the Buffalo Bills, one that will certainly live long in their memory, I'm sure. The Cleveland Browns beat the Atlanta Falcons 26-24. I want to look at this one, Jeff, for a couple of things. In a moment, I want to talk about the NFC South and the fact that it's going to send a team to the playoffs. But this game heaps more pressure on Mike Smith, the head coach of the Falcons. Atlanta have lost 20 of their last 28. Lots of talk about how he potentially mismanaged the clock at the end of the game. I mean, we don't have to get into all of the detail, but he basically called a timeout on third down and then threw a passing play when he said that he called the timeout because he wanted to get the right play, and that if he hadn't called the timeout, Cleveland were going to call the timeout anyway. So I was thinking, well, maybe you let them use one of theirs then. And the upshot was he left 44 seconds and three timeouts for the Cleveland Browns, and they marched down the field and win the game. So there's a bit more pressure on Mike Smith now. Another, you know, and he admitted afterwards he probably did mismanage it.
Well, you know what? There have been questions in that regard. You know, and it's so easy for us after the fact to say you should have done, sure, because the pressure on the sidelines is incredible. But, you know, you look at this and you say, here's a game that they have a chance to win. And one of the things that you want to do when you talk about closing out a game, there are two elements of time that you work with. The first is 4 minutes, where you get into a different type of offense with 4 minutes left to go, because you're starting to really, you want to use every second on the clock. And then you also get into your 2 minute offense and defense, where you're trying to close the game out. And one of the things you want to make sure you don't do is give the opponent possession time when, if you take the lead late in the game, and give them enough time and field position to come back and win the game. And that's exactly what happened at the end of this one. You know, Brian hits the field goal with a minute 58 left. And because of how they used the clock, you know, the Browns were able to come down and kind of hit the 37 yarder to win it. You know, it's tough. It's you've got to understand how the clock, as a matter of fact, you know, Neil, a lot of coaches in the NFL now have a guy whose only responsibility is situational football and clock management. And he doesn't do any strategic calling of the game or coaching of an individual position or any of those things. He is there only for clock management and to advise the head coach in these critical moments what exactly he should do. Now, Mike's going to take the brunt for this, but I'm sure there's somebody on that staff in Atlanta that's got some answering to do this morning in the staff meeting about, you know, what in the world were we doing taking that time out?
Yeah, I remember when big thing was made of a former Frankfurt Galaxy head coach, Dick Curl, was one of the first sort of clock management specialists. He was with the Chiefs and was hired for that very, very reason. I looked at the end of this game, Jeff, and as I was watching it, there was, you could see as Cleveland were driving at the end, I don't know, it looked like, I felt like they were going to do it. And I would imagine that the Browns, who've won a lot of close games this year, had that belief. And I wonder if the Falcons were thinking, oh, here we go again. Because we know they've blown a number of games. The big one at Wembley Stadium, where they were up by 21. I mean, do those sort of thoughts come into, you know, players' minds? Would Cleveland have been thinking, we've been here before, we can do this? And would the Falcons have been playing scared, if you like?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I don't mean scared
physically, by the way.
Funny way. Yeah, exactly. You're playing not to lose at the end. Mm. And, you know, what happens to teams is that they get what we call in the business a mojo. And if the mojo's bad, then it's like they're always looking over their shoulder for that break to go against them, the drop pass, the penalty, the, you know, the third down completion on a third and long that gives the opponent a first down. However, on the other side of the coin, like you said, Cleveland looked completely under control. They didn't look, they didn't panic. They looked like they managed the, you know, that clock situation to go down and kick a field goal hundreds of times. And, you know, again, that's Mike Pettine and that's his staff. And there's a belief in Cleveland. I thought when I watched the game, watching Joe Hayden, you know, play on the corner really was, it was an indication of what Cleveland has become. They have an attitude, and the way he challenged outside and, you know, went after Julio Jones, I just thought that that was really, really, really indicative of the new mindset that the Browns have had. Now, you go back to, I'll take you all the way back in Brownies history to the game in, you know, when Butch was the head coach there, and they have the Chiefs won, and they have the Chiefs beat, and a guy takes his helmet off on the last play of the game and gets a penalty because you're not allowed to remove your helmet during play. And he takes his helmet off because he's celebrating the fact that they had won the game, gives the Chiefs an opportunity. They go, they get the ball in the end zone and win the game. That's kind of how it's been for the Browns at the ends of critical games like this. Now you sense a different attitude in Cleveland, a kind of a swagger, a little bit of a, hey, we know we can do this. We're a good football team. We're going to win this game attitude. And that's so critical. The mojo of your football team is really, really important.
Got to credit the head coach then, Mike Pettine, for that, haven't we, Jeff? Because there's Hoyer didn't play well in that game. I mean, he had three interceptions. There were times when it looked like he was trying to throw it away. But Pettine has come out and said, well, you know, he has the room to make mistakes. And I think that's good if you, you know, he doesn't want to be thinking he's one interception away from Johnny Manziel coming in. You know, and Johnny's another story this week with the entourage and getting into an altercation and all of that. So, but Mike Pettine is, you know, he's strong in terms of his leadership and saying Hoyer is our guy at quarterback, but maybe he's, that strength and that mindset has gone through the whole team there.
Well, I think it has, because what you know, if you know Mike, the thing about Mike is all the way from his time with Rex at the Jets, he's very confident in his ability. He's very confident in his belief system. He's very confident in the football that he coaches and the football that he believes in. And he's able to transmit that confidence to his football team. So even though they're not a team that we think of as an elite level team, it's not so much what the public thinks. It's what those guys in that locker room believe, what they think that they're able to accomplish. Now, slowly and quietly, the Browns have become a better and better football team. They've got a good offensive line. You know, they've gone out and put some pieces together on the defense, and Pettine's put those guys in a system that allows them to really flourish. So, you know, they're not your grandfather's Browns, if you will. They're a team that will be reckoned with and you know, who's going to make noise down the stretch here. They're going to be a factor in the playoff run.
Those Falcons fell to 4-7. They still top the NFC South. New Orleans are at 4-7. Carolina, you know, game and a half, half a game back from that. Tampa Bay at 2-9. Jeff, I was talking about this on Sky on Sunday night, and actually probably people had started to switch off. It was after the game. They were going to bed. It was 12:45 in the morning. But I was saying that, you know, I don't think we can get around the fact that one of these teams has to be in the playoffs. I mean, the division champion has to be in the playoffs. I mean, that seems to be, you know, the general belief. But I wonder if there could be a rule where if you have a losing record, you don't get a home playoff game. I mean, there's every chance that they could be 6-10, the division champion here, and facing a 12-win team and hosting a playoff game.
Well, you know what? It's kind of interesting because we've just kind of gone through that in our own situation here.
Yeah.
You know, early on in the CFL season, the Eastern Division, we couldn't beat anybody. We're 1-6. Montreal's 1-7. Mm-hmm. Toronto's, I think, 2-5 at that time. And the West had four teams that were really, really good. Well, the way our playoffs work, you take three from each division. Unless the third team in one division has a poor record than the fourth team in the other. And then you cross over and that team will go visit. Which happened this year.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, this is tough because how do you say to a team, for example, we just talked about the Browns. The Browns would be the best team in that division if they were playing in that division. But the reality of it is, they're in you know, they're in a division with Pittsburgh and Baltimore and some pretty good football teams. So they're in danger of not making the playoffs. The reality of it is you have to play the schedule that, you know, the NFL gave you. That's all you can do. And if, you know, Carolina or Atlanta or New Orleans or whomever comes out of that division as the division champion, then the way the rules are, they are going to be in the playoffs. And, you know, do I think it's fair? You know, again, that's hard to say. It's one of those crazy years.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, Jeff. I think it's sorry to interrupt you. I think the danger of just saying we'll take the top six teams with the most wins. The danger of that is if you are in the NFC West, where there's that's a tough division, the NFC West. They could potentially take three or four wins off each other at some point, and you could end up with a 9-7 champion out of the NFC West, which would be a very tough. I mean, they are going to all be better than that this year, but. That's a very tough division, so it would work against the tough divisions as well as punishing the weaker divisions, wouldn't it? So I just wonder if maybe taking a home playoff game off the NFC South champion would be a compromise. But and sometimes these things happen. The NFL has to be embarrassed into change sometimes, they are not afraid to make those changes.
Yeah, and I think that's something, that's a topic that's worth discussing when they get together for the competition committee meetings and the league meetings in the off season. But for right now, the way it is, if you're in, you know, and you're in that division, you're fighting your tail off trying to just get to the playoffs. And, you know, this is what we say in pro football. You just want to get to the dance, because if you can get to the dance, anything can happen. And like I say, you look at us, 1-6 to start the season. Nobody, and I mean nobody except the guys in our room, believe that we would have a chance. And, you know, lo and behold, we end up winning two big games down the stretch and host a home playoff game. And now we're going to play we got one shot for the championship. So who's to say that one of those teams doesn't get hot? I looked at New Orleans last night, Neil, and I'm anxious to hear your reaction to this, but that's too good a football team to lose games the way they're losing games.
I still think they'll be the ones to come out of that division, and I wouldn't want to play them. I still wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs. I mean, yeah, that's...
No, especially if you got to go in there and play them at home.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be a challenge. Yeah.
This series of plays, to me, personifies the way the Saints have gone this year. They get a big run down to, I think it's the 3 or 4 yard line early in the game. Then they can't get the ball in. They go for it, you know, trying to punch the ball in, can't get it in. Baltimore takes over on their own 3 yard line, I think, or 2 or 3 yard line. And doggone if they don't run the ball right up the middle for about a 45 yard gain to get off the, you know, to get themselves, get the field turn, get off the goal line. And the Saints, who have a chance early in the game to really get momentum, seize momentum in the game and make an early score. And then even if they don't get the score, make an early statement on defense. It's just amazing to me. They're too good a team to be playing that way.
A couple of other results, Jeff, and we'll just skip through these. But Seattle, big win, 19-3 over Arizona. Denver beat Miami in a shootout, 39-36. And your Raiders won. And did you see the play where Sio Moore and Khalil Mack were doing their little sack celebration 30 yards downfield and Justin Tucker to call a timeout?
Justin Tuck was quoted as saying he was going to fight him if they lost the football game.
Best quote.
You know,
sorry,
that would have been a Raider moment for all Raider moments right there. Those two knuckleheads are. I mean, that's just the sense that, you know, they're young players and, you know, they finally make a play and it looks like they're going to win a football game and they're over there, you know, high fiving and celebrating and almost cost their football team. So I tell you what, it was this. Did you see David Carr run the length of the field after the last touchdown? I mean, it was like they had the weight of the world taken off their shoulders. And I'm happy for those guys. Those Bobby April, who's a friend of mine, is a special teams coach there, and those coaches and players that, you know, Al Saunders is there. Guys, good guys and good football people. And, you know, certainly it's been an unbelievably difficult experience going through this many games in a row without winning a football game. So
I love
there's no play. I don't think if you ask any Raider of any, you know, of any sort, any Raider fan, any Raider coach, any Raider personnel person, anybody that has anything to do with the Raiders, even if you just bought a hat and a T-shirt, what team they'd love to get their first win against, it would be unanimous. They'd say Kansas City.
Well, our podcast engineer, Chris, is sitting through the glass window wearing not one, but two Oakland Raiders caps that have been gifted to him by our producer, Nick Pike, this morning. So so Chris is getting the he's getting the Raiders mojo on. And I love the quote from Sio Moore, who said, "They always say act like you've been there before." Well, I hadn't been there before. He wasn't used to winning.
With the kid, and the kid's just being honest, right?
Exactly.
I mean, think about Khalil Mack. I mean, your first-round pick, and you know, you had great success as a college player, and you're coming into pro football, and this organization with so much history and so, you know, just win, baby, and all the long, long shadow that Mr. Davis still casts in that building, and you know, and you're thinking that, well, this is going to be great, and then every week it's the same thing. We can't find a way to win, and now you're going to win one, and it must have been, that locker room must have been really a fun place to be after the game.
Yeah, I'll bet it was. Jeff, I mentioned offensive line a few minutes ago, and I wanted to talk to you about that because we had the Detroit-New England game on Sunday, and Riley Reiff, the left tackle for Detroit, went down on the first play of the game, and they struggled offensive line-wise for the rest of that game. And I think we've seen that across the league, really. I mean, if we were, you know, Dallas have got a very good offensive line, but if I asked, you know, if we tried to sit here and say who are the dominant offensive lines in the NFL, maybe there aren't that many dominant offensive line groups anymore. Injuries seem to make a massive difference. Miami lost Juwan James in their game against Denver on Sunday. That made a difference to them. Maybe tell us, you know, how difficult it is to find the five best guys for an offensive line, and then obviously to keep them. If you can't keep them, what are the challenges when you're shuffling guys in and out, Jeff?
Well, I think first you got to understand that the hardest thing to find beyond quarterbacks, right? And you got to always exempt the quarterbacks when you're talking because that's such a specialized position. Mm-hmm. But the hardest thing to find in football are good big guys, and particularly offensive linemen, because the best big athletes always go to defense. Now, if you have, and you're going to carry eight offensive linemen in a game. So you have your five starters, and typically you're going to have three backups, a swing guy, a center, and, you know, probably a young tackle. So if you lose one, now you're into a whole different kind of deal because your swing guy is probably the guy that will go in. And that may mean not only moving one guy, it may mean moving two guys. Or in the case of, you know, the Bills sometimes have to move three guys when they're having problems at guard, and when their guards aren't playing well, sometimes they'll shuffle three guys. And that's, now you're talking about different communication, guys playing next to one another that haven't done it. You don't get enough reps in practice. The way the CBA is structured now, you would normally only get 20 or 24 team plays in practice. Well, you can't have your backups taking reps because the starters don't get enough work together if you do that. So the backup then has to go in the game. There's communication issues. There's the fact he hasn't seen the thing at full speed. Now he's read about it. He's looked at it on film. He's done all of his homework. But there's no substitution for live reps. And so it's easy to see why there is such a drop-off. First of all, the guy you're putting in isn't as good as your starter, or he would be your starter.
He would be the starter, yeah.
Secondly, he's going to play around or with guys that he doesn't typically play with. And then thirdly, it may involve multiple switches on the offensive line in terms of, you know, right guard gets hurt. You may have to shuffle a tackle to guard and then move another tackle in. And, you know, you're going to do what's best for your football team, but it's hard to find them. And, you know, that's why secondaries and offensive lines usually take the longest time to function well together, and you want veterans in those spots, and you want veterans that have played together for long periods of time, and that's tough to do in this age of free agency.
Yeah, and it's big for teams like New England who find their five guys at the right time of the year as well. Let's get into our interview then. I mentioned last week I spent the day with a Hall of Famer who was wearing the famous gold jacket at Wembley Stadium. It was Kansas City Chiefs and Houston Oilers Hall of Fame defensive tackle Curly Culp. Let's have a listen into this. Yeah. Curly, tell us the teams you played for. I know the Kansas City Chiefs are one of those teams during your NFL career, and they come here next year to face the Detroit Lions. So who did you play for and when?
Well, I started out in Denver. In fact, I was the first guy picked in the second round. And I stayed there for about 4 or 5 weeks and then ended up in Kansas City. Mm. And there in Kansas City, we were fortunate enough to be with a great Super Bowl team, won Super Bowl number 4. And so that was a great time. And then I played some time at Houston Oilers and then finished up in Detroit. I played, about 14 years in the National Football League. And in 2013, I was blessed with the opportunity to become a Hall of Famer. And this is why I have this prestigious gold jacket.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I tell you, it really feels great on me.
I bet it does. It looks great on you. I mean, but what did that mean to you? Because, I mean, the Super Bowl ring is a team achievement and a big thing for the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's true.
This is for you, the Hall of Fame. What that meant after, what was it, 32 years you waited to get in?
Yeah, I was one of the seniors. Yeah. Me and a gentleman named Dave Robinson were the two seniors on the 2013 class. And so it's very significant to me because the powers that be appreciate my body of work and elected me into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's very special. In fact, the Super Bowl is a great honor, but I think the Hall of Fame is kind of the Bible of the NFL, so to speak. Yeah. And so I'm glad to be a part of that small, illustrious group of men.
You learned the virtue of patience waiting to get in as
Absolutely. I'm just glad I'm here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what is it like when you go to the Hall of Fame and you look at the names? I mean, we all grew up looking at the NFL history and the names that you see, it is the creme de la creme of the NFL, to be a part of that now.
Yeah, certainly is. You know, I was very excited about the whole experience and being able to see, you know, running backs in the Hall of Fame like Jim Brown, people that I played with in Kansas City, people like Bobby Bell, Buck Buchanan, Lynn Dawson, you know, just to name a few, like Jan Stenner and all. So it's great to be among those men. I think I'm number 10 for the Kansas City Chiefs. Yep. And so very, very pleased with that selection.
How has the game changed now when you look at it? Because, you know, looking at your career and people talked about you being one of the strongest people that ever played in the NFL. Were you naturally strong? What was training like then compared to what you see the guys doing now? How has it changed?
I think initially the training back in the late 60s, early 70s was a little different. A lot of guys didn't do a significant amount of weight training.
Right.
I tend to do some of that. But now I think it's more specialized. It's more of a year-round event because of the rigorous portion to get in shape and stay in shape so that you can make your peak performance on game day. As far as the game itself, D-line specifically, it's changed quite a bit because of the new rules that they have, you know.
Yeah.
They protect the athletes, which I'm all in favor of. But I think sometimes it takes away a little bit aggressiveness to the game, you know. But, you know, it's evolving, and that's just part of things.
So you're all in favor of protecting quarterbacks?
Well, you know, some of that is to the point where if I was a defensive lineman and you make that nice move on your offensive lineman, you're going for the quarterback, you really want to knock him out. You know,
don't
so
want to be pulling up, right?
And you got to kind of pull up. You can't hit certain spots, which I guess you adjust to that because I understand that it's a game and these individuals are going to be doing other things after they play football. Mm. So I think it's all good.
Who were the toughest guys you would go up against? Some of the names.
Oh, they're all
tough.
Oh,
well, they are. Well, they are, though, aren't
they? That's why they're professional,
the
right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a different breed. I think when I look at offensive linemen, you're making me go back a bit. But I think some of the Hall of Famers are there, like Larry Little, John Hanna, Ranieri. He played offense.
Yeah.
Ranieri is there. Mm. And so those offensive linemen. And then centers, because I would play the three-man front in Houston, I think the center to stand out are teams like Jim Otto, who played with the Oakland Raiders. Mm-hmm. Jim Langley played with Miami.
Yep.
You know, those guys. So
Jim Otto said you were the strongest player he ever faced.
Well, he was very kind.
Oh.
He was very kind. Well, you know, Kansas City and Oakland, we already had those strong battles, you know, because we're in the same conference and always a competition between either the Chiefs or the Raiders, who are going to be in the championship game. So it was always a good experience. In fact, that year we went to the Super Bowl, we was a wild card.
Yeah.
And we played Oakland in regular season at the end of the year, and we had to go back to play Oakland to have the privilege to go to New York.
Okay.
To play Joe Namath and the Jets.
You're playing in Oakland? Or?
Yeah, in Oakland.
They always give you a warm reception there,
Oh, yeah,
sure,
they're
right?
great.
Throw you gifts.
Yeah.
So what sort of Kansas City are bringing a home game here to Wembley Stadium. If some of those Chiefs fans travel from Arrowhead Stadium, we see it on the TV, an incredible atmosphere at Chiefs games. Yeah. Tell us about those fans in Kansas City.
Well, you know, football fans are great.
Yeah.
You know, and specifically in Kansas City, I think because of the design of the stadium, where the stadium is kind of close to the field, and you get that great relationship, the rapport you have with the fans. And so, they travel well. And they support the Chiefs. They've always supported the Chiefs. And I think it'd be great to have an opportunity for me to come back and watch that game in 2015 when they play the Detroit Lions.
What do you think of the current Chiefs team that we've seen in the NFL this season? They got a big win this past weekend against Seattle. They've won seven of their last eight.
Well, just hope they keep it going. I think they're doing some wonderful things. Andy Reid's a great coach. Initially, during the first part of the year, they had some injuries on defense. They seem to be turning that around. The defense is playing respectably. And so, and with the offense maintaining and doing the things they do offensively, I think they have an opportunity to be in all games. If you can be in the game at the end of the game, then you have a chance to win. So that's all you want.
And they do that. In today's NFL, where it's 500 yards of offense, they're not like that, are they? Yeah. They're quite conservative on offense. They lean on that defense and the running game, I guess. You don't mind that? An old school guy like yourself, you quite enjoy that approach.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What about the this stadium? What do you think of Wembley Stadium now you've got here to see it?
Well, you know, it's kind of a nice place.
Filled up.
Yeah.
Be pretty good. Do you miss playing?
Well, not really. I'm almost that age, you know. And so I've had an opportunity to play 14 years in the National Football League, and I enjoyed that part of it. And now I'm really more of a fan than anything. But playing, no, I don't think I can get down in all threes and attack anybody. I think I'll just stay on this side.
It's nice when you got that remote control. Do you watch the game still?
I do, occasionally.
Who do you like watching in today's NFL?
Since I'm from Texas, live in Texas, I watched both Texas teams, but maybe favor the Texans. And also because I was playing with the Houston Oilers, I watch the Titans sometimes.
Yep.
But my favorite team, of course, is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's my team.
We were talking on the way up here to Wembley Stadium about J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
From a defensive lineman's point of view, when you look at J.J. Watt and what he's doing at the moment, catching touchdown passes, running back fumbles for touchdowns, interceptions, that's incredible. Right?
Yeah, he's a special athlete. And, you know, and he was awarded by the Texans for that ability that he has. I mean, he's one of, I call him, ever ready motor. It's always going, and he's always near the ball, and he plays well.
What have you been doing since you what do you do since you retired from football? Tell us.
When I retired from football, initially I started a business in Houston there, and then started another business in Austin, and then I went on to grad school, and now I'm basically retired.
Nice.
I spend most of my time with American Lung Association and things for them. I do a lot of benefits for different organizations throughout the country. Yeah.
What's it like when all you Chiefs, your old Chiefs, get back together?
Alumni weekend a couple weeks ago was really great to have an opportunity to go back and just talk about the old stories and how the old stories have become embellished. You know? It's always something added every time you go back. So it's a great experience.
So every game, a tackle or a sack gets added. Your stats get bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's something else,
All right, Curly. Yeah. Well, great to have you here in London. We want to see you here in 2015.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, that's Hall of Fame defensive tackle Curly Culp here at Wembley Stadium. Okay, let's get into week 13 in the NFL then. And Jeff, before we get to the Thanksgiving Day games, I wanted to ask you a quick question. Maybe you can throw some light on this. Short weeks in the NFL or in professional football, and I'm thinking specifically actually of Seattle and San Francisco, both those teams came off really physical wins. They won in week 12, but they were really physical games. You know, there's a challenge there for them, surely, to get back up to speed by Thursday night.
Well, it's twofold. Number one, it's emotionally, because you have a game like that, which is a huge, you know, game in your division. And it's a, you know, it's become a rival game, and they're the young guy on the block trying to take your, you know, your championship away. So emotionally, you're gonna peak. It's gonna be a huge game for you, and then you have to wash it off as soon as you get out of, you know, as soon as 24 hours later, you got to be ready to go again mentally, which is hard to do. And then physically, those games are demanding physically. Those are, you know, you talk about playoff football. Well, that's a playoff football atmosphere. So those games take an extra toll on your body, and then you got to come into a short week. So now the coaches have to juggle the reps that you need with the rest that you need. And that's a difficult juggling act. And it really takes a guy in the head coaching position who has a feel for his team, who really can evaluate along with the trainers and the, you know, strength people and, you know, the nutritionists and all the other people who have input in where your team's at, the doctors, everybody, the assistant coaches, and then try and come up with a plan that fits where your football team is mentally, physically, and emotionally on a short week. It's a very difficult process.
All right, let's get into our picks then, Jeff. Probably try and get through these in about 10 minutes. We need to get you off to the practice field. I know a busy week for you with your Grey Cup preparations in full swing. Thursday night, Sky Sports 1. We're on air from 5:30 p.m. We've got three games. And get this, if you're a fan who's been a fan of the NFL for a number of years like me, you can remember listening to, you know, half a game on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Well, on Sky Sports 1 on Thursday from 5 a.m. until 5 a.m. Friday morning, 24 hours of NFL programming. Incredible stuff there on Sky Sports. We've got Chicago at Detroit, Philadelphia at Dallas, Seattle at San Francisco. Jeff, I'll lump all mine in. I'm going to go all three home teams. I'm going Detroit, Dallas, and San Francisco.
You know what, Neil, this is such a, you talk about, and they're all great rival games.
Yeah, great.
I mean,
these are teams that
hate each other. Yeah. So I'm going to say, even though the Bears have shown a little bit of life on defense lately, I think the Lions will bounce back. I agree with you on that one. Mm. The Niners, I think, are poised to, you know, now make a run, and I'll take that one. And I'm going to take the Eagles. I really think the Eagles, even though the Cowboys, it's in Dallas, yep. I think the Eagles, you know, the Cowboys needed that great drive at the end of to win last week, but I think the Eagles will knock them off in Dallas.
All right, so those are the three Thanksgiving Day games, as Jeff said, three absolute crackers, probably the best Thanksgiving Day lineup we've had for a long time. Let's move on to...
Unbelievable lineup.
It is, isn't it? It's great. And interestingly, actually, Jeff, the Philadelphia and Dallas meet twice in the next 3 weeks, and San Francisco and Seattle meet twice in the next 3 weeks as well. It's going to decide some things.
Yeah, and those will be huge games because those are, you know, those are what we call 4-point swing games. Mm-hmm. You know, those are games that, you know, you beat your arch rival and then you have a chance to beat them again 2 weeks later. You really impact where they're going to be at in the playoff race. And these are all games, you know, even the Bears-Lions game, that's a game that has big playoff implications.
Mm. I can't promise I'll watch all 24 hours of that coverage, but I'll be in the studio for 11 and a half of them. So I hope everyone joins us on Thursday night. Let's move on to Sunday. First game on the list, San Diego at Baltimore. How do you see this one going, Jeff?
You know, I'm a Charger guy, but, you know, I think going to Baltimore, that's a big, that's, you know, we talk all the time about how tough it is to travel across the country, go through four time zones to play. And I thought the Ravens, you know, showed the ability to run the ball last night enough that, you know, in the cold weather, and it'll be cold on the East Coast, I think the Ravens, I'll take them at home.
Yeah, I'm going to take Baltimore as well in that one. Cleveland at Buffalo, another 7 sacks from the Bills. They sacked Michael Vick 7 times and sent him to the sidelines. We know that Cleveland are without Alex Mack, their Pro Bowl center. I do think Hoyer was up and down and only up right at the end, which is, of course, when you want your quarterback to be. But in Buffalo, I'm going to take Buffalo to win this one, Jeff.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's interesting because Buffalo, people don't see the Bills much. They don't hear much about the Bills because they're not a, you know, they're not a big market team or a glamorous team or, you know, on television all that much. But I'm going to tell you something. That front four in Buffalo can really, really play. And, you know, Donovan Darius is first-round draft choice. And you know, Williams and Jerry Hughes is playing extremely well off the edge. They've got good people inside. You know, they really, really are a good defensive line and maybe the best four together in pro football.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when you look at you think about the front four, Miami's got a very good front four, but when you, and Detroit, but I don't think Detroit, the sacks have dried up for Detroit. I think when you want that front four to produce, it's not even like, Jeff, that front four is producing the sacks for the linebackers. They're getting them all themselves as well.
Yeah, you know, and like you say, when you talk about Mario Williams being maybe the second or third best player on the front four, you're talking about some good football players. And, you know, you watch them, and they play up the field. They really play across the line of scrimmage. They are very, you know, they disrupt things. They're very physical, and they play and set the tone for that entire defense. And, you know, it's going to be an emotional game coming into Buffalo after all this snow. And, that's a game that, you know, Cleveland's just down the road. Cleveland have a good contingent of fans. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere in Ralph Wilson Stadium, but I'm going to take the Bills.
All right, we're both going Buffalo in that one. Tennessee at Houston. Ryan Mallett is done for the year. Torn pectoral muscle, so they go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I guess at home against Tennessee. How do you see this one going, Jeff?
You know, it's funny, Neil. This is a big rival game. You don't think about Texas and you know, the Texans and the Titans being a big rival game, but the history of the Titans is that's the old Houston Oilers. Mm-hmm. That's the Bud Adams team that left Houston and went to Tennessee, and that city still feels jilted. And they take that, you know, they take that venom out on the Titans whenever they get a chance to play them. So I'm going to take the Texans at home, you know, in a big emotional game.
Yeah, I'm going Houston as well. Washington at Indianapolis. Here's my favorite stat of the week, Jeff. This one came from Peter King in his Monday Morning Quarterback column. Andrew, this is Robert Griffin III against Andrew Luck. We know how their careers have gone in different directions. This is my favorite stat, and it's not a football one. When they came into the NFL as rookies, RG3 took 6 national TV endorsement deals. Andrew Luck, 0. Does that matter or not?
I think it tells you an awful lot about the maturity and understanding of the bigger picture that Andrew Luck has. And I think he's been really, really fortunate to have a father who has been an NFL player, has been an NFL quarterback, and understands that you have to stay grounded. It's Bill Parcells' old thing, don't become a Hollywood quarterback. Yeah. And I think that and distraction that RG3's people have brought upon him with all of the endorsements and all of the being out there so much, it's really put him in a situation where it's made it difficult for him. The injuries certainly have made it difficult for him, but he's put himself in a position where, you know, there's that old saying, you know, it's not what you say, it's what you do that matters the most. And I think that's the difference between these two guys. You look at Andrew Luck, doesn't talk much, doesn't have much to say, not especially with that neck beard, he's not going to do very many endorsement deals, but, what you do is you love the way the guy plays the game. And, you know, I think this is a tale of two cities, if you will. I mean, this is a tale of a guy that understands and an organization that understands and, you know, the people that are around Andrew Luck understand, and another guy that, you know, is frankly, he put himself in a position where it's become a distraction in Washington.
I'm going to take
the Colts.
Yeah. Okay. The New York Giants at Jacksonville. This is a tough one because the Giants are struggling, but Odell Beckham, what a catch, Jeff. You can't coach that.
You know, that kid was a high school player when I recruited New Orleans when I was at SMU. And he comes from an unbelievably athletic family. Mother was a track athlete, phenomenal. Dad was a great football player. And you could see it. He went to the same high school Peyton Manning and the Manning brothers went to in New Orleans. And you could see it even at a young age. He was just – first thing that'll impress you when you meet the kid is how big his hands are.
Yeah.
And it was amazing the catch he made. And almost like he pinned the ball between his forefinger and his thumb. and you know, I mean, it was just – that was – when Chris
Collinsworth – Jeff, that would have broken my back.
I know. When Chris Collinsworth goes on for about 3 minutes about a play and then – The greatest endorsement of a play that anybody can get is what Twitter says, what the players say on their Twitter feeds after the play.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing the reaction around the football community to that kid's play. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal play.
It was.
And, you know, I just think that Jacksonville, you know, keeps plugging away and keeps getting a little bit better. But, you know, the Giants, frankly, still are a better football team right now than Jacksonville.
All right, we're going to both go Giants in that one. It's fair to say I didn't make any catches like that against the Watford Cheetahs when I was playing for the Kent Exiles, but you know, I definitely would have been in trouble. Jeff, we're running out of time here, actually, because we've got to get you off to the practice field. I'm going to say some games. You're going to say your team in one word. Who are you going to pick? Right. Carolina at Minnesota?
Minnesota.
All right, I'm going to go Minnesota as well on that one. I'm struggling to believe in Carolina. Oakland at St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Yeah, I'm going St. Louis
killing
as
me.
Well.
Killing me.
Cincinnati at Tampa Bay.
Cincinnati.
All right, I'm going Cincinnati. Arizona at Atlanta.
Arizona.
I'm going Arizona as well. And we can talk about these ones quickly. Our two games on Sky Sports. New Orleans at Pittsburgh. I guess Le'Veon Bell is going to be geared up to try and run all over the Saints. He's seen Jeremy Hill do it for the Bengals. He saw Justin Forsett do it for the Ravens. Is that going to be the key to this game? It's in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think that Breeze and that offense will, you know, move the football. Mm. It's just whether Robbie can get his defense, you know, squared away to stop the run. And, you know, if they don't, that's going to be a long day in the cold in Pittsburgh.
I'm going to go Pittsburgh. What about you, Jeff?
Pittsburgh.
All right. Our second game on Sky Sports could be a Super Bowl preview. New England at Green Bay. So we know the Patriots are so, so tough at home. Now they get a real challenge on the road against the Green Bay Packers. I can tell you right now that this is going to be a mouthwatering affair. Brady is so good at home. Rodgers is so good at home. I'm going to go Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
You know what? I agree with you. I think Aaron Rodgers in that stadium, in that environment, in that crowd, this one is going to be a fun one to watch, because I think the ball's going to be all over the place. And you know, two great, great quarterbacks playing at a high level and two great offenses going after one another. I'm going to take the Packers, but I think it's going to be a shootout.
Yeah, it will be a good one. Two games left then, Jeff. Denver at Kansas City. I'm going to go Denver.
Yes, I agree with you.
All right. And, I actually think Miami are a pretty decent team. They've just not learned how to finish games. So Miami at the New York Jets on Monday night. I think Miami get that done.
I agree with you.
All right. So that's the results. Well, that's not the results. That'd be good if it was the results. Get down the bookies if it was. let's then just take one or two quick questions from the mailbag. Danny says, has there been a sale date set yet for the International Series tickets? He was hoping it wasn't before Christmas, but I think it will be, Danny. I think an announcement will come very soon. We don't have that right now, but I think it's going to be imminent in terms of giving you a date. And I do think the tickets will be on sale at least a few weeks before Christmas. They make a good Christmas present. I think they make a great Christmas present. And this one question then, Jeff, from, let's have a look. Oh, Peter Joy says, can Miami win 4 of 5 and make the playoffs? So in their last five games, Miami play at the Jets. They play at home to the Jets. They play at home to Minnesota, and they play at home to Baltimore, and they're on the road at New England. So I guess the good thing there, Jeff, I use the phrase quite a lot, is that they're at home quite a bit. I mean, that's what you want at this time of year, won't you?
No question. And particularly if you're Miami, you want to be home late, because you're talking about cold weather teams coming down into what is still a hot, steamy South Florida. Mm. And I think that's a huge advantage. You've got the Jets twice, so you think you should win both of those. You got Minnesota. Those are games you can win. Now you've got to win one of those last two to get in that, like you say, 4 or 5.
It's that Baltimore one at home, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's the one they've got to get. Now, if they can get in, I think they're good enough to make some noise in the playoffs. You know, like you say, you want to see them close games out, but they've gotten better. And this is the time when good teams, you know, step up. And the whole thing in pro football is you want to be hot in the NFL. You want to be hot in December. You want to be the best football team you can be in December, because that is what can take you. Like we watched the Giants do a few years ago. Mm-hmm. They got hot at the right time, got to believe, got in the playoffs and won a Super Bowl. And they were, you know, I don't think you'd find very many people would say that's the best team in the National Football League over the course of the season, but they got hot at the right time and got their mojo working, and away they went.
Just like the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And with that, Jeff, we better let you get off and get preparing. I mean, what's your schedule now?
You know what? We had a big day yesterday, broke down all the film yesterday. The players were off. They went, you know, they came in just to pick up their paychecks and get the itinerary for the week. And we catch a charter flight. We got meetings this morning, catch a charter flight to Vancouver this afternoon, get into Vancouver 7:30 tonight. And then we'll practice tomorrow and all the festivities around the Grey Cup, 102nd Grey Cup, Neil, the 102nd year that we played a championship game in this league. And, you know, it'll be a phenomenal event on Sunday. And you know, we're just trying to find a way to get one more point in Calgary on Sunday and win a championship.
All right. We'll all be keeping our fingers crossed for you, Jeff. And win or lose, we'll do this podcast face-to-face next week.
I can't wait, my friend. I'm really looking forward to being over there and being around all the great fans in the UK and seeing all our friends. And, you know, hopefully we'll be coming over with a big smile on our face.
Yeah. Good luck to you this weekend, Jeff.
I appreciate it, Neil. Thank you very much.
All right, that's Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are a USP content production. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Make sure you join us for 5 live games on Sky Sports this weekend. It's week 13 in the NFL. And make sure you keep one eye on those Hamilton Tiger Cats as they go head-to-head in the Grey Cup final. Until then, it's bye for now, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.